Andy Kamenetsky in the house for Mason today. John is here. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. You know, you were just telling the story about the strike.
Do you remember that when they made him wave at the fans?
So, right before that, when everybody knew the strike was coming, and I was working at KCAL, and I'm doing Man in the Stands for a Angels broadcast. We had Angel games back then. And at one point, everybody in the outfield at Angel Stadium got so frustrated these guys were about to go on strike, they just started throwing stuff on the field. Mm-hmm. So much stuff that they had to pause the game and go out and pick it up. And so I've got the producer of the game in my ear, producing the Angel game, and they refuse to show it. They don't want to, because they have a deal with the Angels.
Like a guy that runs onto the field kind of situation.
Right. Exact same thing. They just, they're doing different crowd shots. They think they came to me and said, don't mention the what's happening, but tell a story about a player. Blah, blah, blah. We do it. So my job back then was I would do Man in the Stands and then hang around and do live shots for the news afterwards. So the news producer gets in my ear and goes, okay, we're leading with the video of everybody throwing stuff on the field. And I said, well, I worked that game and we didn't show it. How'd you get the video? They said, we got it from the Chicago station.
Okay.
And it's great. And I said, okay. So they throw it to me. I go, let me show you what happened in the seventh inning. And afterwards, I've got all these messages saying, I watched you on the game. You never mentioned it. And the producers, and this is part of why it's hard. And Andy and I were just back there watching Adam Silver answer questions. You talk about a guy dodging bullets.
Oh, about Sarver?
About Robert Sarver. Part of the issue.
I wouldn't say he's dodging them.
He's catching a few.
Dodging would imply he's doing all right.
Yeah. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is.
He ain't Neo from the Matrix out there right now.
Part of what we're talking about, like you mentioned, it was 20 years ago that this happened.
Yeah.
That part of what we're fighting against is all of the leagues are in bed with the TV networks.
Yeah.
And so the story that gets presented is completely different sometimes than what actually happened. So they, like, I bet you if you ask the league, hey, when you put all the players on the foul line, they'll say, oh, it was great.
No, it wasn't.
It was not.
I remember what happened.
It was not.
Yeah.
But they would cover it like
it was memorable.
We covered it during the KCAL game. Nothing to see here. All is calm. And as soon as the news ends,
you're doing your
Ireland,
best.
We got this video. It's unbelievable.
You're doing your best so Kevin Bacon.
I was so two-faced that night because during the game, I don't mention it at all. And the producers and mayor going, don't you dare bring that up. Then the news starts. The news producer going, you got to
look at this.
Ireland, we led with it. They didn't even wait for sports.
Yeah.
They
just said, oh, was the
John,
news lead?
You're on at 10:01. Go.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know the news lead.
Oh,
not
yeah.
the sports
and
lead.
And the news.
News,
like, the news was not beholden to the team contract,
yeah.
so they
not.
Just did whatever the hell they wanted. It was
they
it
wanted
was
the content.
It was such a weird night. And to Andy's point, Adam Silver, who I think, for my money, is one of the best commissioners, if not the best commissioner in sports, is you'll when you hear some of this, we're going to play some.
Yeah, we didn't hear it. We haven't heard any of it.
The NBA media did themselves proud today, don't you think, Andy?
I mean, they,
with the questions that I mean, they asked all the questions that you would want somebody to ask Adam Silver, and he's not ducking them. He's facing the music, and he's getting pretty beat up.
Well, this was the, you know how people always joke today was the day whichever president happens to be in is the day they became president.
Right.
Today was the day that Adam Silver finally became Roger Goodell, because he really seemed like for the first time out there. The well-compensated meat shield for the owners.
He was just taking
it. Well, but isn't – but part of that –
was he on
his
heels like Goodell?
I'll stand up a little bit for him in this sense. He works for the owners.
Yes.
And if the owners wanted Robert Sarver gone
– absolutely.
He'd be gone.
Right.
What they have told him is we don't – you know, there's a story that has been told many times. When Donald Sterling was thrown out of the league, there was great pressure – on Adam Silver to do something like that, do something
from
severe.
From his fellow owners?
From the players, mainly.
The players and the public.
Okay. Well, the players and public, sure. But
remember, the players almost, the Clippers almost didn't come out
correct.
For that game, that playoff game.
Correct. And by the way, this is going to be the subject of Ramona's TV series on FX coming out next year, but that she did her podcast about. But in this case, Andy, Silver, as you put it, is highly compensated by the owners.
Yeah.
And I think what the owners told him was, you can suspend him, you can fine him as much as you want, but we don't want to set a precedent of an owner misbehaves and he loses his team.
But I think there's misbehavior and there's that.
Well, look, the opinions expressed by Adam Silver in this press conference do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Adam Silver.
Yeah.
I mean, how he personally feels about this may be very different than what he was out there saying in terms of the explanations, in particular for what makes this different than what happened with Donald Sterling. A really difficult one that he got was Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated.
We're going to play this one. This one is excellent.
Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated asked him in so many words, if an NBA employee, an employee of a team.
Like if me. Like if I did the things Robert Sarver did, I would be
fired. Wouldn't have a job.
Of course. Immediately.
And of course. What is the difference between an employee saying these fireable things, acting in a fireable way, versus an owner? And Adam Silver, in so many words, said there are different rules for an owner versus an employee. And in part, what he is saying, and I think it is correct, the steps involved with removing a team from an owner, they're complicated. There's a lot of legalese. There's a lot of potential jeopardy that comes from discovery if Robert Sarver sues over this, which he inevitably would. And there are a lot of other owners worried about what could come out from discovery. But there's also a tacit admission that once you become a billionaire, the rules are different for you than anybody else. And that is an ugly truth to have to admit, particularly as the commissioner of the purportedly progressive league.
So that has been the whispered thing with Dan Snyder, right? So Dan Snyder has a whole bunch of ugly stuff going on with the Commanders and has for a very long time.
Except Snyder, it's not even whispered. Snyder loves to actually project this. He wants you to know it.
Yes, but the pressure on Goodell is, hey, are you going to do something about this guy or what? And it's kind of what you were saying there a second ago, Andy, which has always been, hey, listen, if we shove him out the door, for instance, Jerry Richardson with the Panthers had a similar situation where he was using language that's unacceptable.
Right.
And they got him out of there pretty damn fast.
Right. I think what Jerry Richardson did is very comparable to Robert Sarver.
I agree with you. But the reason that they got Jerry Richardson out of there as quickly as they did, Jerry Richardson really didn't know where the bodies were buried. He didn't know what other teams and owners were really up to. Dan Snyder does. And one of the theories is, hey, if we go and make Dan Snyder get rid of his team, he's taking us all down with him.
Right.
So we're going to try to let this thing go. Is that what's going on with Sarver?
Maybe. Maybe. And, you know, I read the report. I would have made steps to remove him. I think he's a bad guy. But I'm sympathetic to the fact that Adam Silver works for the owners.
Yeah.
And he's getting...
So does Roger Goodell.
Right. Same thing, though. It depends on how strong your support is in the ownership group. Like, for example, I think Jerry Jones had to want Jerry Richardson out.
Sure.
I don't think without Jerry Jones you get that done. If a powerful NBA owner wanted Robert Sarver out, I think he would probably, and he was able to build a consensus, he would probably be out. I think the owners are saying, well, look, we want it to be incredibly difficult to remove an owner.
Is it a slippery slope argument? Is that what we're talking about? If you get me for this, even though it's ugly and unacceptable, you're going to get the next guy for something slightly less, and then the next guy.
I don't even think they're necessarily worried about slightly less. They could be worried about something on par.
Yeah.
Maybe not an exact.
Sure.
Example.
Go see history with another owner. Something comes out in the next year, 2 years, and now all of a sudden it's, well, you got rid of him, so now you're getting rid of him, right?
It may not be racism and misogyny as the bad behavior, but it may be something that is bad enough that objectively you should be out too. And you're worried that, okay, if what Robert Sarver did, you know, with Donald Sterling before him, rises to the occasion of this is untenable for you to own the team. I'm concerned that, like, okay, take for example Mark Cuban. Remember a few years ago, there was a big expose
employee.
And Andy, maybe that's why. You know, do you guys remember when Sterling got thrown out? Cuban was the one owner who said, "We should think really long and hard about not doing this, you guys. Once we throw out an owner, once we establish that precedent, they're coming for all the
rest of
us."
Especially if you're Mark Cuban,
and
who runs his mouth constantly.
He lost the argument. The other owners went, "This is so egregious. We have to get rid of Sterling." To your point, maybe that's what Cuban was thinking. Look, he goes, people in glass houses don't throw stones. All right. And that was his point. But Ramona said yesterday.
And John, really quick, it's just kind of gnawing in the back of my brain. Yeah. You're talking about how if Jerry Jones had to sign off on Jerry Richardson getting booted, right? Who's that person in the NBA? Because I think if it's Jerry Jones, it's Bob Kraft, it's Mara's in New York. Like, we kind of know who the three or four guys in the NFL are.
Right.
Who's the person in the NFL said, guys?
Or in the NBA?
In the NBA, I'm sorry. Yeah, they said, Robert Sarver's got to go. And everyone said, oh, okay, we're going to follow. Who is that? Who's
now,
that
in 2022,
yes.
I think the Warriors ownership group probably has a lot of pull. Yeah. You know, the Lakers have a lot of heritage. The Celtics have a lot of heritage, but they have relatively new governors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeannie's relatively, even though she's been with the team forever, she's, you know, took over for her dad.
Maybe Miami.
Yeah.
Maybe just
Mickey Arison in Miami.
I think, somebody that might be a little worried.
Yeah. Mark Cuban would, same thing. You know,
cruise industry?
Yeah.
You sure?
Do you watch Succession?
I do.
See, remember all the stuff that was going on in the cruise line?
The cruise business Oh, okay. That feels like a place you could hide some things. Mm-hmm.
So going back to Andy's original point, I do have some sympathy for the position that Adam Silver's in. And I think you're right when you say, if this was a monarchy and Adam Silver had complete unfiltered power,
yeah,
Robert Sarver might be out on the street today, but he works for the owners,
yep,
and he takes his lead from them. And I think the owners have said, look, you can punish this guy and you can suspend him and you can fine him the maximum, which they did, $10 million.
But you can't take his team.
Mm-hmm. And so Adam Silver didn't.
All right, change of gears here a
little
bit.
Hey, by the way, can I ask you something?
Sure.
I heard you guys talking about what set you off in hour one. I didn't start listening until
hour two. Oh, boy, see, now it's going to get me all going again. We have this guy that calls
us. This guy's awesome.
A variety of different names.
Okay.
He's got a different name.
Today was Jerry.
City the whole time. Today was Jerry from L.A.
Yeah.
And
we used to have a guy like that.
And Jerry's game is to talk about the Dodgers reasonably for about 20 seconds.
Right.
And then quickly morphs into what a bozo Dave Roberts is.
Okay.
And the punchline is always the same thing. Dave Roberts can't manage the Dodgers. Dave Roberts couldn't manage a insert minor
some
business.
Fast food restaurant.
Right, right. He couldn't run a Kinko's. He couldn't run whatever it is. And we've done it a million times. And today I just finally had enough of it. That I snapped.
Well, I started yelling at him, but he hung up. I'm like, call back.
No, I said to him, I said, listen, if you're going to make this ridiculous phone call every single day and you're going to go over, tell me what you would like Dave Roberts specifically to do differently over the last handful of years that he's been
and
here.
And he won't give you a specific example.
He hung up.
Yeah.
He hung up. So it's like they won the division 9 out of 10 years. The one year they didn't win it, they won 106 games.
They've been to the World Series three times in the last five years.
5 years. Yeah. They may make it 4 out of 6. They've been to the LCS, I want to say, 7 times in that 10-year window. What exactly would you like him to do differently? And it just, I'd had enough. That's what set me off.
Yeah, I don't understand where the Dave Roberts hate comes from. I really don't. Like, every manager makes mistakes.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's maybe one manager that I would take ahead of Dave Roberts. I would take Terry Francona. Other than that, is there another manager that you would say, hands down, way better?
No. No, I don't. I think that there are a couple of guys that do as good a job as you can in that role. First
right.
of all, this is not the days of Tommy Lasorda saying, you know,
I had
feeling
a gut
a hit
feeling
run right
and,
here.
Yeah.
We're going to steal second. We're going to. No, every this stuff is down to the 12th decimal place on whether it's a good idea or not. And they're executing the plan. The job is make sure your guys know what you're going to ask them to do. Make sure that they're healthy. Make sure that they're prepared. Make sure they understand their role in the
team.
Keep
a bunch of millionaire athletes from killing each other
right.
over 162 games.
And he's really good at that.
Yeah, you know what was funny? When I used to cover the Dodgers for the LA Times, I did the Dodger blog for, I don't know, 3-4 years. I had a couple years with Grady Little and then a couple years with Joe Torre. And one of the things that I noticed that was really funny from having a really active comments section is all of the criticisms about Grady Little, that he relies way too much, gives too much deference to the veterans, doesn't know how to manage a rotation in particular, can't manage a bullpen. Exact same criticisms of Joe Torre from the fans. Doesn't know how to deal with the rotation, doesn't know how to deal with the bullpen, gives too much deference to the veterans. The difference is, one of them is Grady Little, and the other one's Joe Torre. Joe Torre blew out Scott Proctor's arm on two coasts. He did it in New York and L.A.
Joe Torre wouldn't let Matt Kemp play for 2 years because he didn't play the
right way.
But he's the best player on your team. Maybe we let him play.
By far. Yeah. But he's but he's Joe Torre.
Did any of the comments say that Joe Torre can't run a coffee bean? Because I don't think we've had coffee bean yet, but we've had a lot of examples.
We've focused most on diners. It's been Norm's. It's been Denny's. It's been IHOP. These are the places.
Tell you right now, if any of our commenters ran a Denny's and they were hiring, Grady Little wouldn't have gotten a job. I can promise you that.
By the way, you're driving. It's late at night. You've been having a nice night. All three spots, one on each corner. Norm's, Denny's, IHOP. Where are you going?
Denny's.
Norm's.
I'll go IHOP.
I'm going Norm's. I think it's Norm's.
Norm's.
They got that steak, Andy.
They do. And
but Denny's, is there anything that's not on the Denny's menu?
No, everything's on there.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a very quick story. One summer I played in the Jayhawk League. It was between my sophomore and junior year of college. And so wood bat baseball league, you get sent to middle of nowhere and you play baseball every single day. And we would play in Wichita for 3 days, then you drive to Amarillo for 3 days, then you drive to Nevada, just all these little teeny towns.
Yeah.
The bus driver gets to decide where you stop on these road trips, right? Okay. Our bus driver, Darwin Boo, loved Denny's, okay? So we would always stop at Denny's. For 2 months, I ate at Denny's at least once a day, sometimes more than once a day. The only menu item on the Denny's menu that I have not had, John, I've literally had every single thing on
you
the Denny's menu.
You memorized the menu.
Yes. Except, yeah.
Moon's Over My Hammy?
No, that's a go-to.
Yeah, that's
Moon's
a good
Over
one.
My Hammy.
That's
a good
one. I thought maybe you would not have the obvious.
Liver and onions. Could never pull the trigger on the liver and onions
at
Denny's. But everything else, I'm in on it. Mason and Ireland coming up next. Andy's in for Mason. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Christopher Ellis, that was fantastic.
Thank you, buddy.
What was I saying yes indeed for?
We can never have enough Boogie Night drops. I'm just saying that. I'm throwing that out there.
Particularly when I'm on, Chris knows that I am a massive, massive Boogie Nights fan. Boogie Nights is basically a language between me and Morales.
Yeah, my favorite promo of the whole year is I'm in Idaho, and the great thing about, and welcome, this is Mason in Ireland, Andy Kamenetsky in for Mace, is I'm in Idaho, and Greg, the day the Lakers schedule came out, and let's put in a promo, today, we're very excited around here, the Lakers schedule is out, and there's this drop, and it says, "May I see it, please?" You know, the Colonel.
I know exactly what you're referring to.
"May I see it, please?" I don't think anyone else got it except me. And I'm driving on some back road in Idaho, and I immediately texted Rouse and said, "That is the greatest use of a Boogie Nights drop of all time."
And also, too, that is a great job by Chris in terms of an obscure reference that if you don't get it, messes up nothing. Like an inside joke.
It's just somebody saying, "May I see it,
right,
please?"
Right, exactly. Yeah. If you get it, awesome. If you don't get it, you're not taken out of it. So, again, kudos to Chris Morales.
All right, so we're working on a bunch of stuff here, including we'll get you some of that sound from Adam Silver. We got guys cutting it up in the back. But I want to start here. I'm assuming everyone watched the Dodgers last night as they locked up their ninth division title in the last 10 years. That is staggering that they have been that consistent and that good. And Andy, I think people forget that right before that, we had Frank McCourt. Things were about as bad as they could possibly be. Attendance was down, team was lousy, nothing going right. Mark Walter and Guggenheim come in. They bring in some minority owners, people like Peter Guber and Magic Johnson. They hire Stan Kasten, a really seasoned baseball executive. Andrew Friedman is brought in, and this thing just takes off. And if you go back and look at the Dodgers in, let's see, Guggenheim came in like 2012, 2013. Greg, was Justin Turner here yet?
That's a good question.
Or is it possible that Kershaw is the only one left from when Guggenheim bought the team?
If Turner wasn't there yet, it's got to be only Kershaw, because really the longest guys have been Kershaw and then Kenley Jansen.
Right.
He went to the Dodgers in 2014.
Okay. So I think when Guggenheim took over, they didn't even have JT yet. All right. Ned Coletti's the one who went out and signed JT. So here's my question. And you guys are both big Dodger fans. You guys follow the team closely. Andy, we joke about the blame pie, which you claim you invented and I claim I invented. Mm. But we both like it. If we were to do the reverse, a credit pie, all right?
Ooh.
Who gets the credit? Like, if we were going to rank, looking back on this 10-year run, Dodgers have made the playoffs all 10 years. They've won the West 9 out of 10. Who's at the top of the credit pie? Ooh.
Wow, that's
Greg, when I phrase it like that, you watch more Dodger games than anybody here.
Right.
Who's been the most important person that gets the credit for this 10 straight years of postseasons?
Andrew Friedman.
Why?
Because he built this team to what it is right now. He not only did he make them who they are, and that they have a great farm system. They bring in the right guys. He spends the money on the right guys. He makes the right decisions. He brought in Dave Roberts. He brought in everything that he's done has been the right choice.
If I buy what you're selling,
yeah.
Why isn't then the credit going to Mark Walter and Stan Kasten, who went out and found Andrew Friedman?
So they get credit for that, but at the same time, he came in and did everything that needed to happen. So he gets the credit for that.
And Andrew Friedman.
And by the way, we can take some calls on this. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. As we celebrate the Dodgers winning another division title, who should we be shouting out? I mean, obviously, Kershaw's been a mainstay if you want to get into players. Dave Roberts has had a consistent leadership voice. I'm kind of with Greg. If you put a gun to my head and said one name, I'm probably saying Andrew Friedman. But I think Mark Walter should get a lot of credit. I think Stan Kasten should get a lot of credit.
Whoever directs scouting, because their farm system's been incredible.
I think that's partially Friedman, again, moving around. And the one thing is, Greg, they train and let people go at will. Yep. Like, Alex Anthopoulos, the guy running the Braves, used to work for Friedman. Farhan Zaidi, who's running the Giants, used to work for Friedman.
Gabe Kapler used to work for Friedman. Yeah.
If these other teams come in and say, okay, and you know, sports, Andy, are derivative. This happens all the time in the NBA. If a team has a winning record, everybody comes in and raids their assistants, raids their front office.
The Rams have been going through that.
Yeah, Rams are like the best example you can find, probably in all of sports, every year. Wade Phillips used to have a joke that if you'd ask him about somebody, you could say, and he knows Sean McVay, which would immediately qualify somebody to be a head coach. I'm just astounded. I mean, the stuff that this Dodger team is doing, Andy, is historically great. I mean, not just, you say, 10 years of making the playoffs. It's like when the Braves were in the 90s and they made the playoffs every year. This Dodger team is doing things that teams haven't done for 100 years.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about it before, but when you mentioned the part about how, like, different people from this organization have gone on to become leaders in different organizations, that's also a credit to the Dodgers, not just in the sense that they clearly identify good people, but they fostered a reputation of, we will not stand in your way of success somewhere else. Like, we will allow you to grow. And if there are if we've reached the limits of where you can grow within this organization, we will happily support you going somewhere else. Like, we can be a feeder system, not just for players, but for your career as well. So it becomes a place where you feel comfortable in your own shoes while working there. It doesn't feel like people are out there with knives, you know, like looking basically to backbite you and backstab you.
Right. And I also think that when you get a lot of – Andrew Friedman strikes me as the type of guy who doesn't really care who gets the credit. He deserves a lot of it, but it doesn't strike me as somebody –
That's easy when you know you're going to get all the credit anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's not like Mark Walter discovered Andrew Friedman. Andrew Friedman was already considered a genius – when they brought
him in. He was getting
in.
Those teams in Tampa into the World
right,
Series
exactly.
when he had no money.
So he's got the luxury, in certain respects, like Sean McVay, has the luxury of being comfortable giving out credit to other people because they know they're going to be getting credit anyway. Everybody's going to assume that Andrew Friedman is the genius behind the Dodgers, so why not be generous with that credit? You know you're getting it anyway.
All right, so the Dodgers are 98-43. All right, which means they have 22 games left?
21.
21 games left. Okay. So they're going to shatter the all-time record for a Dodger team in wins, 106. They won 106 last year. They also did it in 2019. They're going to zoom right by that. They're probably not going to get to 116. That if they have 21 games left, Greg, they'd have to go 18-3.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably too tall of an order.
I mean, it's possible, but no, they're not going to push that hard.
But you look at all the other stuff that this team is doing, and it's stunning. You know, for example, they may obliterate run differential for a Dodgers franchise. In 2019, Andy, they were 273 runs scored more than they gave up. 273. Right now they're at 320. I mean, they're not just zooming by the record. They're just these are like Wayne Gretzky numbers.
And by the way, that's with guys like Max Muncy for half the season, Bellinger for most of the season.
Still Bellinger.
Well, yeah. He's had a hot week.
He had two games.
He's had a hot week.
Two games.
For him,
Craig's
that's
right.
A week.
He reverted back to the mean last
year. Look, man, I'm rounding up in celebration. Yes. 2 = 7 with my math. But that's with half a season of Muncy, nothing from Bellinger, and they're putting up this type of offense.
No, you're absolutely right. But Muncy, by the way, has been on fire recently. Since August 1st, he has 14 home runs. He's pushed his average from like 160 to over 200. His on base is way up higher. He is a legitimate threat all over again, like he has been the last couple of years, where you can't throw him fastballs anymore. He's either going to walk or he's going to hit a home run.
So listen to this, you guys. Here's a list of teams that if the season ended today, the Dodgers' run differential, the fact they've scored 321 more runs than their opponent, would be fifth in the history of baseball. Here, Andy, here are the teams in front of them. 39 Yankees, 27 Yankees, 36 Yankees, 1906 Cubs. That's it. That's the list. The most recent team, 1939, 82 years ago. I mean, one of the hardest things to do is recognize greatness, Greg, when it's happening.
Yeah.
Because you say, well, you know, they won last night, so what? No, this team is historically insane.
Just put it this way. Ever since the league became integrated, this has not happened.
Right. I mean,
it's a great way to put it.
Okay, here's another way. I mean, it's staggering to me. They may win. Their win percentage right now, Andy, is .695. They've won, you know, that's the list of teams that have a .700 win percentage, which is definitely within reach. They'd become the 11th team ever. And here again, here's the list. 1906 Cubs, 1909 Pirates, 1954 Indians. Bob Feller was on that team. 2020 Dodgers. Now, the difference is shortened season.
Right, right.
Easier to do that. This team is about to – I mean, if you haven't seen this team play, if you're not watching the games at night, it's crazy. It's just crazy. All right. Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, is going to join us next. We've got a loaded show here today with a bunch of stuff to get to. And Sean McVay will join us for his weekly appearance next. But first, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter was created by a guy named Ian Siegel, who I've gotten to know a little bit. And Ian gave me one sentence that perfectly describes ZipRecruiter. I said, why does it work? He says, because we don't leave anything to chance. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. For free at ZipRecruiter.com/LA. If you are hiring, go to that website, ZipRecruiter.com/LA. Here's how it works. You post a job on ZipRecruiter. They send it out to over 100 top job sites. Then their powerful matching technology identifies people with the right skills and experience and invites them to apply to your job. It's such a good formula that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within one day. It's actually a little higher than that, 83%. So if you want to step up your hiring game, give ZipRecruiter a shot. You've got nothing to lose because, as I mentioned right now, it's free at ZipRecruiter.com/LA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LA. What are you waiting for? Go to ZipRecruiter.com/LA. Sean McVay, coach of the Rams, next on ESPN LA. And this Sunday, the Rams host the Atlanta Falcons at SoFi Stadium. And as he always does, win or lose, Sean McVay, nice enough to join us for his weekly appearance on ESPN LA. How you doing, Coach?
Doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing excellent. And let me start with this. I've heard this said by a lot of guys like me, Sean, a lot of talking heads, that when a team loses, and you guys lost to Buffalo last Thursday, that players become more coachable. They pay closer attention. In other words, it's easier for a guy like you to get their attention when they go through a loss. Is that true, or is that something that talking heads like me just say?
Well, I think when you got the right kind of people, they respond to adversity the right way. And I'd like to think that our guys are open-minded and all about, you know, extreme ownership and accountability, whether that be after a win or a loss. But, you know, to say that there might not be quite the same sense of urgency when you get humbled, if you got the right people, it's all about that response. You know, there's a lot of things that occur, but what you can't control are a lot of those things. But you can't control your response, and then that inevitably leads to a lot of the outcomes that we're hunting up. And I know this, you know, I was sick. I didn't like the way that I handled that game the other day, but it sure does wake you up in a way that you're going to do everything in your power to be eyes moving forward towards a really tough Falcons outfit. And that's all we can do is compete to the best of our ability. But when you got the right people, you get kicked in the teeth, you know, you get up and you say, let's freaking go. And that's the mindset that we're in.
What specifically did you not like about the way you handled the game? And then if you could just look at a few of the things that stood out to you in terms of the way the team handled the game, what did you not like?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at it, you know, I could talk about this for hours on hours, but ultimately it's about having a feel for the flow of the game, putting players in a position that's conducive for their success, snap in and snap out. And, you know, I don't think I ever allowed us to get into a rhythm offensively. You know, they got going with their rush early and they were only rushing four guys. And so there was a lot of reasons, but, you know, I think some of the decisions I hurt our ability to do that. And then things kind of commingled. It wasn't one person in general, but there was a lot of things that were uncharacteristic for our players. Certainly, I think it does start with me with some of the decisions. And then I think as the game went on, when you get it to 10-10, and then they end up going up a touchdown, and then they get up 2 touchdowns. Now guys are trying to make a play, but they end up playing outside the framework of our schemes, whether it be defensively or offensively. It's not for the wrong intent, but it's a good reminder of, hey, be in the moment, hit the reset button after every single play. And if we just compete to the best of our ability within the framework of what we're trying to get done and play together, good things usually happen. And when they don't, you know, then we look at it, we address it, and we move forward.
Sean McVay, coach of the Rams, is our guest. Sean, last year you guys were kind of a three-headed monster at running back. Sony Michel and Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers all got the ball. A lot of that was dictated by injuries. Both Cam and Daryl got hurt last year. At least in the Buffalo game, it was a heavy dose of Daryl Henderson. Is that the way you envision things moving forward? Is it more of a running back by committee like you had last year? Or where does the running game stand in your mind right now?
I think, number one, to be able to get more runs off, you have to be efficient. And we can't afford to be in bad down and distances if we do run it on some of those early downs. It puts too much pressure on the overall operation. But I think if you're in an ideal scenario, you're talking about Daryl and Cam are both involved and they're both getting touches and they're both helping our offense be successful. But You know, I never pigeonhole myself into kind of one all-encompassing approach. You've heard me say it before, though. I look at it as we've got two starting running backs. I truly feel that way. And if both guys are involved, that's usually when we're operating at a premium. And if not, then, you know, sometimes you ride a guy's hot hand. But ultimately, it's about efficiency. And I think both these guys are capable of activating all parts of our run game.
Kind of along these lines in terms of things that may not have been expected offensively, it was a really quiet debut for Allen Robinson. What have been, I guess, the challenges of integrating him into the offense? Did not playing any preseason games make it awkward at all?
No, I definitely wouldn't use that as an excuse. I think, you know, I've got to do a better job of getting him as, you know, getting him some more opportunities with some of the calls, you know. And then I do think that, you know, while you can't minimize, you know, hey, that wasn't a good performance, it was one game. We were really out of the flow of our normal operation after about 40 snaps. And so I think it starts with just some of the opportunities, and I've got to be able to give them that. And then ultimately we have to be able to be in a normal kind of rhythm offensively for all parts of our offense to come to life. But Allen is certainly somebody that needs to be more involved, and there's really nobody to blame that he wasn't involved other than myself.
Sean McVay with us, coach of the Rams. Sean, here come the Atlanta Falcons, who were very competitive. You know, a lot of people think they should have ended up winning that game. And I know on paper, a lot of people have said that the Falcons may be in a little bit of a rebuild, but I watched a lot of that game and they look pretty good to me. What concerns you about Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, I have tremendous respect for them. They're competitive in all phases. I think they're, you know, extremely well coached with, you know, with Arthur and they've got really good players. You know, I know this, I've been around this league, whether it was growing up around it with my grandpa or being fortunate enough to coach in it for how long I have now, that humility is only a day or a week away in this league. And I don't care, you know, what the narrative is outside. And I see the tape. These guys are playing really high level ball. It was a high caliber game between them and the Saints the other day that could have gone either way down to the wire. But I saw an outstanding football team, and I see a team that is ready to compete. It's going to take all four quarters, and we're excited about, you know, getting another opportunity to respond this week. And we're going to take it a day at a time, but I can promise you this, there's no taking anybody lightly. This is a great football team coming in here. Every single week is too challenging in this league, too many good coaches and players, and that's what I saw in week one from them.
All right, Sean, last thing for you. There's been a lot of talk because of the Monday night game about clock management at the end of games. And by the way, had Denver made that field goal, nobody would be talking about clock management. They would be, you know, praising the Broncos for how they did it. But since I knew you were going to be on, I wanted to ask you about this. At the end of a game like that, when you're managing the clock and the score, do you have a lot of voices in your head? Do you want your assistants to say, hey, coach, take a time out here? Do you want those guys to be quiet so you can kind of clear your head and make sure? How does clock management execute itself at the end of an NFL game, at least on your staff?
Sure. Yeah, no, we've got, you know, I like to have good dialogue and collaboration throughout. I think what's helpful is when you are an offensive play caller, a lot of those situational decisions are in alignment with, okay, do I want to go for it on fourth down? If I'm going to do that, what's my play call? If I don't like the play call, I've already talked to Joe D about where that range is for Matt Gay, and are we playing our percentages? And, you know, in a lot of instances, you know, you got to ask yourself, really, it's as simple as, okay, when the clock's ticking down right there and you need a field goal to win it, if we went for it, you know, 10 times on fourth and five, or if we kicked that on fourth and five 10 times, which higher percentage do we feel better about? I mean, if we were at SoFi, you look at that kick that Matt hit the other day, you know, I wouldn't have any hesitation sending him out there for that range, you know, because of the way he was kicking it in warmups and because of the atmosphere. Now, you know, when I hear Nate, and I have tremendous respect for Nate, he talked about that was kind of their goal. But I think it's easy to question in hindsight for everybody, but I think as long as you're convicted and you have rationale and reasoning behind your decisions, you can be at peace with them. And so, but to answer your original question, it's about collaboration. I do like having the ability to communicate with guys, you know, to be able to take advantage of the totality of our staff, but you do have to be able to make those decisions, and sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. And everybody's got all the answers and no accountability when they talk about it.
Right. Exactly. Hey, by the way, Sean, did anybody tell you that, I don't know how they figured this out, but somebody figured out that Gay's field goal against Buffalo would have been good from 68. Did you hear that?
You know, mean, yeah, Sunday Night Football, you know, which was obviously broadcasting the game, when we played on Thursday.
Right.
I've noticed they started doing that last year where, hey, it's good and would have been good from this. And I believe it. I mean, he cleared that thing, you know, very 68. I would have said I would have assumed that might have been true from about 70. But he knocked that thing nice and great snap, great hold, great kick.
All right, Sean, thank you for doing this, man. I know you got a crazy week. Good luck against the Falcons. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
There's Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams. What do you got there, Greg?
I was saying goodbye to Sean McVay, but while I'm saying goodbye to Sean McVay, I just wanted to let you guys know that if you didn't, that Thursday Night Football is now Amazon's Prime Night of Football, because every Thursday Night Football game is only on Prime Video. Beginning September 15th, watch the NFL's biggest stars compete every Thursday night of the season. And to kick things off, two of the NFL's most exciting teams battle it out as the Los Angeles Chargers travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Watch the games on any device and visit Amazon.com/TNF for more. The new era of Thursday Night Football is officially here, and it's only on Prime Video. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
And wow, what a great opener they've got. How about that for their first Thursday night game?
That ain't
Chargers
bad.
At Chiefs.
That ain't bad.
And there's actually a cheat if you want to watch the game tomorrow night that I'll share with you coming up. But next is Wheel of Questions. We'll spin the wheel coming up next. Andy Kamenetsky's in for Mace, Mason in Ireland, ESPN LA. All right. You guys are going to think I'm making this story up, but I swear I'm not. This is an actual true story for today's Wheel of Questions. A nursing home in Taiwan hired a stripper to entertain senior citizens in wheelchairs. Andy, really good idea or really bad idea? What do you think?
I guess it depends. Did all of the residents survive?
Well, the nursing home has since apologized. it's a veterans home, a state-run facility for retired Army personnel in Taiwan.
Thank you for your service.
They paid the adult entertainer for a steamy show to celebrate their mid-autumn festival, an important holiday in Chinese culture, whereby people gather and celebrate the rice and wheat harvest of the season. But yes, there were no cardiac incidents.
That's what I'm getting at. It's a great idea if everybody comes out, you know, breathing. It's a bad idea,
Bergman,
if it was too much.
Really good idea or really bad idea to hire a stripper for the senior citizens in wheelchairs at the senior citizens' home?
Look, man, if I'm going to go out, there's not a better way to go out. So absolutely, this is a fantastic idea. And I'm sure they're going to be just fine if that was the way they went.
And if you watch the video, by the way, Jorge.
Oh, there's a
the
video.
The men, oh yeah. Oh.
Video
the men
happen.
Are all smiles.
Then I'm all in.
Okay.
I'm all in with it.
I've just put myself in the shoes of the seniors. If I'm in a wheelchair and I'm in the senior citizens home, and every day at 1 o'clock I go get soup, and instead of soup I get a stripper, that's a good day.
It is a good day.
That's a good day. I don't think you can criticize, even though they apologized, I don't think you can criticize the senior citizens.
Again, as long as they are criticizing for what might be considered poor taste as opposed to funeral arrangements, I think it's okay.
All right.
I mean, it's really the family that's going to be have the most problem with all this, right? The families are going to be upset.
Well,
with it,
if you kill my grandpa by creating a stripper in front of him, yeah, then I'm going to be pissed.
But I mean, a little bit, but at the same time, be like, you know what? Look at the smile on his face as he
looks. Look at the
I think a lot of
go.
It depends on, you know, how you felt about that person in the home.
Okay.
I mean, you put him in a home for a reason, right?
Oh, man, that's cold. Before Sean McVay called in, we were talking about the Dodgers. And I bring this up every year, Andy, and I want to take another shot at it. And then after this, Greg, I think I'm just going to drop it. Because I think I've been beating this drum for years, and I think it might be a losing cause. But, Andy, I'll let you help me decide if I should give up the goat, okay? I'm an NBA announcer. I'm raised in an NBA culture. I have never, ever seen champagne in a locker room when the Lakers win the Pacific Division title.
Oh my! Are we really doing this?
I've never seen it when the Lakers win a playoff series. I've never seen it when the Lakers make the finals. The only time they break it out is if they win the title. Same thing with the Rams. Rams win the NFC Championship game. They make it to the Super Bowl. They're not breaking out the, you know, the ridiculous champagne until after it's over. Yet in baseball, they celebrate every rung of the ladder. Now, two nights ago, the Dodgers clinched a playoff spot. They didn't tape up the walls. Last night, we've got the Dodger channel on here that we're watching the replay. Full-blown champagne bath and full-blown celebration for winning the Pacific Division. I've argued, and the only team I know that has done it is Jeter's Yankees when they were going to the World Series every year. They just didn't celebrate division titles. They waited until they... The Dodgers have won 10, have 9 out of 10 times they've won the West. Everybody knows this season will be considered a failure if they don't win the World Series. Wouldn't you have liked to have seen them just, like, reporters walk into that locker room last night and say, hey, why aren't you guys celebrating? And the Dodgers say, because we haven't done anything
yet. No. So I am never going to criticize baseball for being too fun.
Okay.
I mean, think about the way we've talked about
baseball.
So would
you argue that NBA should do it?
I don't care if they do it or don't. Like, you know what the Lakers and the Rams have never done? Because you said you've never seen the Lakers do this. You've never seen the Rams do this. You know what you've never seen them do? Play baseball.
Right.
It's a different sport and a different culture. This is what you do in baseball. You celebrate after every single round. It doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make it any worse. It just makes it different. And again, it's fun. This is the least fun league in major sports, and we're getting on them for having too much fun?
Greg, then explain to me, do you feel the same way Andy does?
Of course I do. Tyler Anderson is 32 years old and has been on awful teams his entire career, and now he just made it to the playoffs and won the NL West division, not the Pacific division.
Yeah.
This absolutely should be celebrated. Guys like him, Yency Almonte, the guys that haven't done this before, they deserve it.
All right, explain to me then, two nights ago, when they clinched a playoff spot, no party. Last night, they win the division, big party. If they win a series in the postseason, they'll do that again. Where's the line? So some teams will break out the champagne if they get if they make the playoffs, even if they don't win the division, right?
Yeah, but you should be doing this in your old man voice while you talk about it, please.
Hey, I'm in the eye. Hey, figure champagne around her brain. How many times are you going to do this? It's ridiculous.
Got goggles on.
I got hit in the head with a cork.
But what? Explain to me where the line is.
There is no line. Like Andy's saying, it's fun. It's baseball. It's a sport. They're having a great time. They're having a great year. And they're playing, and it's not going to slow them down. They're not all of a sudden going to be like, oh, we're not good anymore because we celebrated a win.
They've got a month before the playoffs. Like, they could play the next 2 weeks drunk and celebrate.
Right.
And they still have 2 weeks to refocus.
Okay, let me ask a more basic question. Why do we care that they won the division?
Because they lost it last year?
They care. They care. Like, what do we... They don't care what we think. They care that they won.
Yeah, I had great respect for those Yankee teams that Jeter was on that just said, we're not celebrating a stinking division title.
You know what? Jeter probably was just worried somebody would see him celebrate anything. That guy never allowed a cell phone around him.
Yeah. Well, but did you see the roster of girls he dated? He had plenty to celebrate. If there's anybody that should be celebrating,
sure,
it's Derek
but I'm just
Jeter.
Saying, like, that was Jeter. It's like the same way Jeff Kent used to keep those Dodger clubhouses totally miserable so nobody would talk to him.
Right. Would Jeff Kent have celebrated last night?
I actually had been in clubhouses where they've won before, and I don't remember Jeff Kent being in the middle of
it all.
I can
see him storming out and going to take a shower or something.
He probably would have loved it. He could have just left, and nobody would have noticed.
It just seems weird to me, but I think I'm going to drop it because I've been
Thank
beating
you.
This drum forever,
I just
and
don't
nobody,
see why you
nobody
care.
Sees it like I do.
I don't understand why you care.
What I want is the Dodgers to win the World Series, and I want that to be the prize. And I think if you start celebrating for winning a division, what have you done?
You won a division.
After 162 games of a grueling season.
This is the tradition. You are upholding the tradition. They celebrated when they won the World Series in 2020. I'm sure they celebrated in the 80s all those years that they won the World Series. Like, this is what happens. is what they do.
Huh. I wonder if I'm on an island here.
You are.
Does anyone agree with me? 877-710-ESPN.
Bergman's worst nightmare.
No, well, he knows when I do the show that he's got to answer the phones. 877-710-ESPN. And you can disagree with me, too, if you want. Also, coming up, Andy and I mentioned the Adam Silver stuff. We've got that coming for you around the corner. Lots of other things happening today. We'll do a little Lakers stuff. All still to come. Mason and Ireland, 1 hour down, 2 more to go. ESPN LA.